Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
FC Day Trippers, brought to you by bookmakers.com. Hello, good evening, and welcome to the midweek fix, which is, well, it's not midweek, it's Monday. So it's the midweek fix from the LFC Day Trippers. We were going to be doing a winners and losers tonight, but Phil had an absolute breakdown in a WhatsApp group this morning and started showing all sorts of stuff to me about Liverpool. And I said, well, look, let's just talk about it at 10 o'clock tonight. And he said, okay. Phil, how are you? I haven't seen you in ages.
Yeah, no, I was interested this morning. I've lost the interest as the days got on. Yeah. So I told you it was a Frank the Tank moment. It was like, hang on, I'm going to start this all out, yeah. Right?
It was like an Eamon Dunphy moment, was it? Where you just lost the plot for like 11 minutes and then it completely went out of your mind by the time lunchtime came. I have it all written down, though. I actually have it. Like, I can read it word for word if you like, or just shorten it for you a little bit.
Can I disagree with myself as well tonight?
The chances are you might, because I go, this, and you go, no, I don't agree with that. And I go, but that's what you said. You know what I mean? But
that's fair.
No, in
that's
fairness, fair. We done a show yesterday. It was really good. Me, Shawnee, Emma, and Keith as normal on a Sunday night. And we got into all sorts. Mm. And we ended up with the whole ownership and whatever else. And we might get to that towards the end. I'm not going to give you my point of view again, because I've given it last night. And I'm sick fucking talking about it, to be honest with you. Anyway, this one, though, was a bit different, because what we were talking about last night, what you come up with this morning was, Gav, I've listened to this morning and there's some points that weren't brought up and I'd like to bring them up. So I'm going to do them as the order you gave me. We can discuss them. We can get stuff out of the chat and stuff like that, and we can do it over an hour or so. But before we do, this show is brought to you by bookmakers.com. You can check out their website and their YouTube channel in the description. Check out their website. If you gamble, please gamble responsibly. But all the best offers for gambling and bookmakers and stuff is on there. But as I said, gamble responsibly. If you don't gamble, it's probably somewhere you might want to go anyway, because there's loads of comparisons and stats and stuff like that where you don't have to gamble at all. I love looking it up for all different things anyway. But go and check it out, bookmakers.com. And if you subscribe to the YouTube channel, I think it's every Wednesday we're releasing the Premier League preview, which I'm on. And it's I'm having a lovely time doing it. It's something different away from the Trippers, so go and check them out. The charity stuff we'll talk about in a little while. So, Phil, the first thing was...
I'm gonna check this out. What's this? I'm going to check you out, Gav, because I'm going to...
If you type in Bookmakers TV into YouTube, you will find their YouTube channel. Right. And I've done two Premier League previews so far. We're just looking, myself, Jamie, who's a Spurs fan, and Liam, who's a United fan, and we just go through the games of the week on and look forward to a few the week coming up, and it's half an hour, 40 minutes. It's nice and easy.
Do you do what I used to do?
What's that?
So when I'd start to go on to a different show or whatever, right, back in the day, I'd make the complete opposite points to the ones I used to make in the Trippers, I used to get bored saying the same thing over and over again. And like, because it was a different audience, I didn't have to play heel, because you know the way I just like to do it, right? And I suppose I'm setting it out at the very start, so it's, you know where I'm coming from.
To be honest with you, on this one, it gives me the opportunity to talk football and not always Liverpool. Like last week, we didn't cover the Liverpool game because the North London Derby was on, the Manchester Derby was on, Everton were on the brink of being beaten by Southampton, and we'll be bringing that Alsatian dog out soon to rally the troops. And Wolves and West Ham was a big game at the bottom of the league. So it all depends what big games are coming up. Liverpool will figure this week because they play Chelsea at Anfield. But it's good. Check it out. Subscribe to it. And it's a lot more easy going than here. We are easy going, but this is more heated than you would find on that channel. But
combat juggling, hang on.
Ashley says he's delighted Phil's back. He's been wanting to ask him to cover combat juggling next time he covers the World Games. So There, Phil literally wants to get off this podcast now and go and look up combat juggling, because that's all he's interested in now is possible world games and participants, sports and stuff like that. But
well, if the lads want to know what I've been doing mainly in the last
running,
whatever amount of months it's been. Well, one, I was over with Eltel and they're celebrating his 80th birthday. Honest to God, Gav, I'm sort of sad that you didn't say here.
Did you go to Terry Venable's birthday, right? And when you got there, you were like, happy birthday, and he was like, well, it's not really my birthday. I'm just here pretending it's my birthday, but it actually is my birthday.
Robson was there trying to blow out the candles.
John O'Wass, is the War Games still ongoing? No, the War Games finished days ago, but it will be back in three years.
The qualifiers are on at the moment.
Okay. But there you go. The War Games was amazing. Phil had the time of his life. When was it? During the summer? September?
If people think this is... It was July in Alabama and Birmingham. It was fantastic. But to be fair, I have to say, I've just seen the new plans for Dublin's outdoor swimming pool complex that they're planning to put in down at Spencer Dock there. At George's Dock. Yeah, at the IFSC. Yeah. And that's ideal.
Is this the white water rafting place?
They've gotten rid of the white rafting place and decided to build a massive outdoor swimming pool complex in Dublin. Now, there's lots of issues with this. But what lads don't know, right? What lads don't know that are obviously not from Dublin here is at the moment there's a massive recycling plant in the middle of Dublin Bay, right? And when it floods here, it basically overspills all the toilet and excrement and everything into Dublin Bay, meaning that half of Dublin Bay is unswimmable, right?
Yeah.
So now they're planning to put an outdoor swimming pool in an area that tends to flood when it gets in. There'll be, if you think there's bacterial infections knocking around at the moment, there'll be massive hospitalizations. You'll be literally going down to
collect your armbands and a tetanus injection before you go swimming.
A box of penicillin.
Yeah, the whole fucking works, you know what I mean? St. John Ambulance won't know what's hit them when this thing arrives. Anyway, I'm going to bring this to you in the order that you said it to me this morning, right?
Yes.
So the first point you made this morning to me was, a lot of people are claiming that FSG as owners, Maverick is asking, what's transition? This is a clusterfuck of a season, basically a wasted season. What's transition? You're going to learn what we're talking about. It's not the transition in the playing side. We're going to look more in the back room. The part of Liverpool, the hierarchy of Liverpool, Maverick, if that's okay. And thank God you've only had to ask me three times before I've answered you. But we were talking, and I think it was Shawnee saying last night that the owners are constantly gambling on transfer windows and doing the bare minimum and the luck maybe running out. And I think he has an argument to that. I think Liverpool have sleepwalked their way into this with regards to the midfield situation. But you feel, and this wasn't you just being fucking edgy, you said,
no.
Gav, in my opinion, and it's out there, that it's Klopp that's gambled this. Now, before I ask you about Klopp, do you think both of them are in on this, or do you think Klopp is the sole reason for the gambling, as we'll put it, transfer window on transfer window?
So this is layered, right? So, and I said to you when I was doing this, that this isn't just a simple... you're to blame and that's the end of it, right? But in this specific point that's being made, everyone keeps saying FSG has been gambling in the transfer window. It's like when the centre-backs got injured, FSG gambled that we could get Champions League and get through to the back end and then we'd sort it out in the summertime, right? This is Klopp. At the time this was going on, and this is what drove me mad about this idea, is that Klopp himself said that he wasn't prepared to sign someone just to sign someone. And he's said this over and over and over and over again. And the reason why our recruitment has been quite good up until recently, and we'll come into this sooner, but has been that he refuses to take a 80%, 70% of what we need or what he's identified, right? And he's gone to the lads in the recruitment teams that were there and said, find me three players, right? And then he seems to get fixated on one player out of those three that they get, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or in some instances, he's happy to say, well, actually, those two or three, in my opinion, are equal. So if we can get one of them, I'll be really happy about this, right? But this situation about gambling is, I wish Alisson had never scored that goal against Burnley, because that West is the Brom. Biggest gamble they, you know, West Brom, whatever, they're all the same. That was the biggest gamble we made as a club, and it paid off. And it seemed to embolden to say, well, actually, we only need to solve one piece of the puzzle per window, right? And that's more on Klopp as opposed to wholesale changes. The last wholesale change we made, where we went right the way through the spine of the team, was the year before we go in the Champions League, where we go Alisson, we go Kayser, we go Fabinho, and I can't remember what else we brought in at the time. But that, yeah, Van Dijk, they were the key signings we made from December through to the end of that window, and we changed the spine of the team. So when we're talking about change, that was the one time in Klopp's whole reign that he basically ripped out what was there or what wasn't there and put something in, right? So now we've got to a situation where he's emboldened by the fact that he gambled on the centre-back, got away with it, and was able to get the player he wanted, which is Konate, into the squad, right? He got Van Dijk back, and he has Matip, and Matip was playing really well. The medical team have held him together and fixed him all up, and he's getting his 26 games, and Van Dijk was getting his full 38 games or whatever out of the season. And we had Konate coming in saying, well, if he's a little bit injury-prone to start, once he gets up and running, he'll be grand for another 30 to 38 games that's there. But that doesn't happen. That doesn't happen in midfield, and as I said, this is layered, but he's emboldened by the gamble and is prepared to take a gamble and wait for the player he wants, right? Wait for that player. And we see it with the Nunes signing. He clearly, in my mind, that was one that they were probably trying to organise. And the Diaz thing, they've said themselves, that wasn't going to happen if they'd waited until the summer. They wanted to wait until the summer, but they became aware of Tottenham Hotspur's interest and had to make a move at that point in time, right? So this is where I'm saying the manager on this one is to blame more so than FSG. Think about it. John Henry and Mike Gordon and the rest of them are sitting there aren't there with the massive opinion. Nah, gamble, lads. Now you don't need it. You've got loads of players. Walk away there. Do you know what I mean? Like, they are the ones that are governing or dictating this. They have their issues. And I'm happy to talk about my issues with them as owners in terms of what that looks like. But in this instance, it's not FSG gambling. It's Klopp that's gambling. And it's the recruitment element that he's gambling with. And he's rolling those dice. And if things don't come up right, we deflect all our energies away from Jurgen Klopp. We adore Jurgen Klopp as a fan base, and rightfully so because of what he did. But at times, we like to ignore his errors, mistakes, and sort of problems he has within his own management structure, right, that are inherent to the way he manages. Because you can't have all the good on his side without having weaknesses. Nobody has done weaknesses. And this is an example of one of his weaknesses. Loyalty is another. Loyalty to players who pass by at a certain point in their career is another. And that's been there since he left Dortmund. That's not a Liverpool thing. That's a Dortmund thing as well. Sorry, I won't keep going.
Well, you see, I'm not going to tell you you're wrong, because the point I was making last night on the show was that I have to keep caveating everything I say with, please don't take this as a defence of FSG, because I'll keep saying it. If FSG have to leave this club for Liverpool to progress, fine. No fucking problem, right? So let me just start by saying that, because I get hounded by fucking people going, oh, you're this and you're that, and I'm kind of going, well, you don't listen completely to what's being said. I can't tell you you're wrong, because the point I was making last night was, nothing really comes out, Phil. Right? Mm-hmm. Now, and I'm not asking for Jurgen Klopp to turn around in a press. Like, he was asked again 40 seconds into a press conference today. The first question was about, how are you feeling 2 days after that Brighton result? And he went on. And then the second question was, you have a lot of faith in the players within this squad. When do you feel the time will come? And I'm ad-libbing a little bit. When do you think the time will come when you'll have to look outside this squad, i.e. transfers, to sort this problem out? And he just went, Is there a language barrier here? I keep answering this every week, right? Now, my point was, I'm not asking for them to come out and go, listen, I want fucking Jude Bellingham, this and this, and the owners won't get me, right? And blow a fucking hole in the whole thing. I'm not asking them to do that. I'd actually, a little bit of frustration somewhere towards what he has, I think would be okay. Because then we have something to work off. Right now, you're sitting there and you feel that Klopp has done that. To an extent, I would agree with you. But at the same time, I look and go, well, when you look at the figures within the club and the financial figures, they get in and they don't make huge profits and they don't make huge losses. They run on this very even kilter, okay? And part of me is saying, yeah, but even if he wanted it, would he go and do it? Because it would bring them over a threshold that they have drawn in the sand for a long, long time, right? Klopp says today that, look, it's not about me asking for money and it's not there. If there was people out there that were available and someone we wanted and was available, yes, we would try bring players in. But at this moment, is it the moment to do it right now? He can't see it. And what he, and people blew up with that. What do you mean you can't see we don't need players? His whole point was, we don't see the player out there that's available that we can bring in. Now, a lot of fans out there would say, well, just bring him or him or him. We know that's not how they work, is it? And we absolutely need one. We absolutely need one, Phil. And come the end of January, I've no problem turning around going, listen, it might be Klopp running that risk. It might be FSG. It might be both of them together, which I think it is, right? In whatever percentage you want to throw at it. But I've no problem saying at the end of January, lads, you just fucking have to do something there. And you just haven't given yourself, you have to give yourself the best chance. And we're looking at that. It's not like there's a player out of form, Phil. These just look players that are shot, right? And but
we can debate that because I, and the reason why I say that, right, is yes, they're shot, right? And I mean, but I don't think they're shot as in they're done, right? I can't, because the Fabinho thing is the one that I keep coming back to. If it was just Henderson or Thiago, I'd say, yeah, these lads are well into their 30s. There's an issue here, you know, it's just legs and et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, we're paying the ultimate price for having the season we had last year and not capitalising on the four trophies. And everyone was wondering, what's the impact? I think there was a mention last night that the fall-off had happened before. And I remember when we talked about it, was they going, we were just about scraping the results from the end of March. We could get up for the big games. And by the time we got to that Real Madrid final, those legs were gone. And they were gone at that point in time, right? So I come back to this again, Gav, right? That's the manager. That's the recruitment team. They knew this. They gambled that the squad and the players that they had in that squad will be able to go again for the following season, will be able to get the energy levels, be fatigued, natural fatigue. And this comes on, I suppose this feeds into that second point I made to you about the whole recruitment team walking the notice period, right?
And sorry, this one comes, last thing on it. Eunice says, yeah, was Arthur Melo the right player? And that's a great point, because If the manager and the club are telling you it's the right player they need and you know, and available and stuff like that. Now, was Arthur Melo available? Yes. Was he the right player for Liverpool? I don't think so. I don't think he's a bad player. I think he's a really, really good player. But reliability is killing Liverpool. And this fella's just not reliable. Okay? And that's a good point, because they go and sign him and you're kind of going, the right player thing doesn't really wash here. Do you know what I mean? Like, don't get me wrong. If he turned around that at the end of last summer and said, look, and he comes out and he says, look, I didn't think we needed a midfielder. A lot of people did. Maybe those people are probably right. And turned around and signed Enzo Fernandez or Moses Caicedo or Jude Bellingham. And he just went, bang, we're fucking doing it. Forget it. We have to. You kind of go, yeah, you pay more heed to the whole right player available sort of thing. But the Arthur Melo thing throws it in there. And that's why I just love some smidgen of clarity on it. But it brings you on to the second one, because you've just said it there and you're right. The departure of Michael Edwards, the arrival of Julian Ward, yeah, he's now on notice that he's leaving. The impact it's had on the recruitment. Because these were a well-oiled machine that were given plenty of credit. They were building statues of Michael Edwards, you know, in jest.
Yep.
But that's the sort of word that was being used around them. And now...
Rightfully so, Gav. Gav, what everyone's given out about, right... And what's coming out more and more in the press at the moment is that Klopp has a much bigger say in transfers that's going on at the moment, right? And I'd argue we're into our worst run of transfers that we've made in terms of success in this whole Klopp reign. And I think it's been progressively getting worse since Edwards has made the decision to step away from the club. And I think it's natural. We come on to it, but look, you've got the whole recruitment team there, and I go back to the idea that last summer they knew that this team, including James Milner, had put in more games, more minutes on a pitch than any other team in Europe, right? And their answer to what this team needed, considering the way we're playing, the way we like to play, the answer to that was to bring in a centre forward to replace Sadio Mane in a different manner and try transition to a different style of play. Okay. And that they believed that the midfield would be capable of going again for a full season, knowing full well that there was a World Cup on in the middle of all this, right? And if Jurgen Klopp is at the very top, that allows that, and we give him all the praise for all the trophies that we do and all the runs that we have, then he's also at the very top when you have to question the decision. If us as a fan base are looking at it saying, that was probably going to be an issue at some point during the season, which had a World Cup in the middle of it that's never happened before, then, you know, I come back to it. Where the joined up, the whole picture, the whole jigsaw started to unravel at the point that we had this gap or vacuum at the very top, which was Edwards and Klopp, right? So if you take them as a tandem, once Edwards decides to step away, I truly believe there's been a vacuum there, and we were praising Ward for bringing in Diaz and Nunes. A lot of people.
But Ward works alongside Michael Edwards for the last year.
Yeah.
And I've no issue with the Darwin Nunes thing, because at the end of the day, you know, Firmino had a year left on his deal. You had Origi leaving the club, and Minamino leaving the club. You had, Jota had the odd injury, and it's come to pass there as well. So Darwin Nunes made sense. I think it was completely separate to what he should have done elsewhere. But is that part of the joined up thinking that wasn't there?
I just don't know. And it just seems to me, when you start looking at the other changes that are happening behind the scenes, I keep going back. So there was a guy, it was a very important guy who went, I think, in May, it was the guy who was the head of Elite. We were talking about it earlier on, guy who was the head of the Elite Performance and Recovery or something like that. But he went to Newcastle. And I've had this thing in my head ever since the Saudi lads got into Newcastle, that I'd be amazed if at some point one of those big nation states don't go all out to bring in Edwards for what he did and what he was recognized as. Because remember, we were seen as this model of amazingness to how to reform transfers, recruitment, identify young talent in different places and not really worry. Like, you don't have to spend billions and billions and billions because you have this fantastically driven model that sits underneath, and you get the right manager in and everyone works together and it's all a fantastic system that's in place, right? And this fella's already at Newcastle, and I just keep looking at it, and it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger on me, and that we have these guys. We had Ward, who was Edwards' right hand man, resigns out of the blue, right? You have Graham then, who quickly follows, who was the guy that was there for 10 years with Edwards, that was there and was heading up the stats department. And I'm not the doom and gloomers that I've seen on there saying this is terrible, it's a brain drain, right? But again, it's a level of transition. And I suppose this was driving my key point around it. Everyone keeps talking about the transition of the pitch and the transition of the players and that we need to change this and we need to change that.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
How many clubs, can anyone in the chat, and I'll put it out because I want to see, because I couldn't think of one today. Can anyone in the chat think of when a club that was at the pinnacle, at the very top of European football, right, pulled every part of its recruitment and sports directors and the cogs that were behind, that got them to the top out, right, and said, right, we'll put something else in? Can anyone think of any club that did it and did it successfully?
I can't think of one either. You know, you look at Barcelona changed presidents, and there's obviously a bit of shifting goes on there, but usually it stays as is and presidents just come in and put their own thing on it. If you go back, Chelsea have probably done it at some stage, because Chelsea do stuff like this, you know what I mean, to a certain extent. But you know, I'm not too sure whether they were at their peak when they done it. But you know, like, you have a good point. You know, Edwards says he's gone. He's been there 10 years. That's absolutely fine. The word that came out at the time was he wanted to get away from sport. He wanted to go and do something else. Julian Ward was going to shadow him more or less for the last year and then take over. But then we learn within what, a couple of months, that Julian Ward is now on notice and he leave in May. You know, and it's, even if you're trying to change what you're doing, right? And I don't know the ins and outs of this, but I'm just trying to think as a layman. If you're trying to think what you're, or change what you're doing, you would say to yourself, right, well, listen, Julian Ward, or Michael Edwards might go, but we need Julian Ward in there, right? And we might want to change him, but he's just an extension of Michael Edwards. We might want to change that, but it's going to take 2 years to do that. Because we want to do this guy in 6 months and this guy in 12 months, but we need to keep a foundation of what's there. It's a bit like when you're changing the team on the pitch. You know, you might want to say to yourself, I definitely want two midfielders. And those two, you know, they're getting on a bit, but we're going to have to keep them. You know, whether that's a Milner and a Henderson, that I'm going to have to keep them for a year to 18 months just while I get this right. And then that'll, the natural progression then would, they would leave the club and you would have, you'd be in on a more solid base. It's a bit like the Konate signing. The Konate signing for me is a forward planning for me, definitely Matip, if not Van Dijk. You know, and in 3-4 years, you're sitting here going, Konate is Air Van Dijk now. And we brought someone in the meantime. But it's a steady progression as to what you do. And I think that's where fans get frustrated by it, Phil. And yes, it bleeds down. And I think you're very... you're well entitled to bring this forward because, you know, and there's some bits I'll agree and some bits I won't, but you have to have a steady progression. And if fans are getting frustrated because they're not seeing that, particularly in midfield, right? Now, I don't think one, two midfielders will fix everything in this team. I think you probably have to go back then and look at, Klopp might need to make decisions quicker. This fella might need to, whatever recruitment they have, if they don't want it the way it was with Edwards, but they, and it can't be the way they envisage it now, they have to find a middle ground there somewhere to make it right. You know, and maybe from the top it's bled down and that's where we're left with midfield, but it still comes back to me where you're sitting here going, see, I don't know if it's Klopp and I don't know if it's fucking FSG and I don't know if it's anyone in between, but it's a fair point and maybe a fair assumption to say, well, all this unrest within it can't help.
No, I think I disagree there because, yes, it is Klopp. Yes, it is the recruitment team. And yes, FSG are complicit because they should have, when they decided to resign, letting fellas work out the notes. Like, forget about that. Listen, whether you're selling the club or not, right, to have no structures in place when the new owners are coming in, for the new owners, that's great. But we're not talking about a car that had a lovely body and great wheels and all it was missing was the engine to go into it. Because so many times when these fellas come in and take over these clubs, they're taking over clubs that are really struggling and see an opportunity to bring value into this. This is a sale at a peak level of the asset, right? And that, to me, the complicitness here goes from the top part where we've got more control over transfers and we're doing this, but we still only want the right player. Well, how can you identify the right player when the rest of the lads are sitting there Googling holiday in Thailand, off to Ibiza next May. Oh, yeah, hang on. I'm just downloading this one because when I go to Newcastle, I'm going to need a list of the lads that I need for centre midfield and all that type of stuff. This is crazy. There's not a sport in the world where if your recruitment team are moving on, that you let them see out the notice period. And then when you're trying to build or rebuild or transition or whatever you're trying to do in terms of replace players that's going on, because all the knowledge they're going to take with them, they have it. And then what's their interest? What is their interest? If they're saying, what is their interest in getting the right setup into the club outside of some level of, well, you know, they'll still be clued in until the day they go. You think about anyone that's there, right? You think about anyone that's there, anyone that moves jobs. At some point, mentally, you check out before you move.
Correct.
Right?
That's just natural. That's human. That's human nature.
So I don't think having these guys here are helping in any way, shape or form. And also, it goes back to the idea, if Klopp is such a stubborn man that he only wants the player that he wants, right? Okay. Who's going to challenge him? Because Ward has resigned. Graham is gone. Edwards is gone. Where is the counterbalance to this idea that, no, this is the only fella that works for me? Do you remember when we signed Salah? Klopp really wanted the German fella. I can't remember what his name was. Yeah, right. Wanted Julian Brandt. And Edwards was saying, no, look, this Salah fella is absolutely amazing. Trust me on this, right? And when he said, right, we'll go with Salah. And look what happened, right? But that's because there was somebody in the club that was able to act as a counterbalance. When you have a yin, you have to have a yang, and it works in every form of life, because you cannot have, there's no point in us sitting here, and there's no point in any podcast existing, there's no point in any type of broadcast, there's no point in any type of life where you can't have this balance and argument. It doesn't have to be a fight, it doesn't have to be a row, it doesn't have, but there has to be a counterbalance. You have to look at, to weigh up the right option, you have to see all the bits that's going on, right? And for me, I'm looking at it saying, okay, here we go. Let's look at this as in totality. We're transitioning this whole inside of the club part. What we're trying to transition on the pitch. This is ripe. Before a ball was even kicked, this was ripe for an absolute disaster of a season, right? And it's been heading that direction since, unfortunately, April time last year, when the players themselves, once you ran those players in, once those players got run into the ground, pursuing greatness. And who doesn't want the team to pursue greatness? We want that team to pursue greatness every single season, right? Once that happens, and you have this vacuum that's going on across the very top part of the club, that where the decisions are made that keeps this team ticking and keeps this thing on the tracks, then you don't even get out of the station before it gets derailed. And that's what's happened this season. This has really happened before we even get on to Tottenham. Anything else,
When you're talking to me, I'm visioning there nearly like, you know, this fella switched off, you know, is Klopp trying to take more influence on what, on how they come to that decision with regards to players? Are FSG quite happy sitting there going, if there's a bit of not sure about this, not sure about that, we're okay with that because it means that we don't have to sanction whatever, right? And you can make arguments around all that because I keep going back to it, we don't fuck all, right? We're just throwing things out there and seeing what happens. But I get what you're saying with regards to the yin and the yang and the balance and stuff like that. And, you know, it is a bad move. Like, it's starting to look like one where you try move all these moving pieces and you try service them all at the one time. And, you know, has Klopp got frustrated with, I need this, I need that? Not with FSG, but with the recruitment team going, I need this and I need that. But this, like you said, this fella's over here looking up fucking Airbnb is in Munich because he's heading off for a week, you know. And again, that could be absolute pie in the sky, but because we know nothing, it's out there, you know. But do you think they're looking for a fix? Because that's where the whole ownership thing comes in, right? Now, you know, and I'm going to throw it at you because, honestly, you watch Liverpool and then you've literally, that's it. You watch them and, you know, you don't really pay much attention after that. But you've had stuff around minority stakes, majority stakes, full sale, no sale, you know, invest the stake to come in, that's where you're going to get your investment to redo this. And then you've had the arguments, well, these are leaving because there's going to be a new owner and they want their own men in, but nobody's kind of there. Like, where are you on that? Because honestly, Phil, the club is fairly watertight in what's said. Now, there's an awful lot of stuff online today saying that Michael Edwards has gone to his friends in the press and thrown a few bombs out there, and the press are running with them. I haven't seen them. I'm gonna be honest.
I think they're talking about the Miguel Delaney article that's right out there this evening. It's an interesting read because it sort of puts more into this that we're talking about, where there's this power vacuum now at the top where things are starting to creep up, and potentially this is where the whole sort of he's been gradually getting more control over the transfers and
sorry,
things like that.
Sorry, I did see one mention of the Miguel Delaney thing. It was someone messaged me earlier and said Miguel is saying this and this, has known it since 6 months ago, but it's just decided to tell us in January. So but I will have to go and read it. In fairness, I'm not a big fan of Miguel Delaney, but I will go and read it. Unless it's behind the paywall, which I fucking definitely won't. But you know, I'll read it without making massive comments on it. But do you think there's a fix, Phil? Because no, that's the wrong question. There is a fix. There's always a fix to everything. But where do you think the outlook is here? Because our FSG looking going, we're selling this, you know, it'll be gone in 6 months. It doesn't make a difference what we do in January. It'll be gone in 6 months. We're going to get our money anyway. The talk is there's offers on the table. Qatar was thrown around. But do you think they're working on a fix? Do you think there's been a bit of a power grab from different people here? Or just this is what we've ended up with? Because he makes a massive point of thanking Julian Ward after Cody Gakpo was signed. You know, the first thing he says is, big shout out to Julian Ward and for getting this done and putting so much work in, and it's brilliant. And I'm kind of going, is he trying to be nice to him? Has he kind of done the dirt somewhere on Julian Ward and he's just trying to be nice before he leaves? Where do you think this goes?
Yes, Red Steve was just asking, where's the green mic cord going? It's right here, look.
Oh, yeah. It's not green anymore. It looks like you might have damp in the room or something.
No, this was in the studio for years, so okay. It's now sort of, it's got patches. It's more of a Norwich mic cover than it is.
John, ask Gab, you don't like Irish man Miguel Delaney. I've kind of clashed him a few times in chats on social media, and some of his stuff I read, I kind of go, it's a bit bizarre, you know. But some of his stuff is really good, like, don't get me wrong, so I'd rather read the article before I make any comment on the article. It was just someone sent me a message earlier saying,
yeah,
he's known all this stuff 6 months, but he's only telling you now. It's a bit mad, but
let's take this fix in stages, right? Because I think there's a bit like that. This isn't just, you know, it's not just signing two midfielders and everything in the world gets better, okay? Because it doesn't, and we know that Klopp's methods and his methodologies in terms of how he plays, the midfield is probably the hardest place for you to go in straight away and make an impact because of the way he wants the team to play and how he sets the team up and all that type of stuff, right? So let's take the first bit. How do we get through to the end of the season on the pitch? Mm-hmm. Forget the everything else, right? Mm-hmm. And for me, the answer, it goes back to that disaster season when Alisson scores, right, where we end up finishing third. Yeah. That, to me, the answer goes back to this. And only when the injuries piled up sufficiently did we get to the right answer, right? And I'm hoping that Klopp can get to the right answer without needing injuries to get him there, okay? And the answer here is not to keep flogging the lads who are banjaxed, right? You can use one of those three, but do you know who you flog? You throw in the kids. You put in Bajetic.
Keith said this last night. His point to this last night was, you know, it's not working. Teams are identifying that we're lacking in energy, right? Maybe Elliot doesn't work in a three-man midfield, but he might work if you put two behind him and put him in a 10, you know, and it might reduce his responsibilities. And you know, that's good. Like, but I know where you're going with this. Just get legs in the team, regardless of what it is.
It's not just legs, Gav. It's going back to the idea. So 2021, had injuries not happened, Henderson and Fabinho would have played at centre-back for the remainder of the season, right, until the injuries started clearing up at centre-back, right? But they don't, right? We signed the Greek fella who was awful in the end, right? Cuspidopoulos. Remember him, right? And he played against Leicester and fell over and then sort of scored an og and all that type of stuff.
No, hold on. Who are you talking about?
The Greek fella.
Kabak?
Yeah, whatever.
He's not Greek.
Him. Yeah, well, he's...
No, he's not. Right. You're thinking of the fella that played for us in 2010.
I keep getting confused with Kabak. And do you remember your man, Pastaspas, that turned up at a Fulham game and we thought we were going to sign him and then we didn't sign him. Do you remember that one?
Oh, yes.
And he ended up signing with Arsenal at one stage.
Oh, yeah, no, he was at Arsenal and we think we were going to take him. Yeah, I remember him. Yeah, go on.
No, forget that, right? But in my mind, right, so stop playing, and this is going to light things up, right? But stop playing Keita. Keita is talent, but look, stop playing. There's no point. You're not going to offer him a new contract.
I would go against you on that.
I get why you'd go against me. I don't care. We could have an argument, but no, because the reason why it is, he doesn't have the stomach for the fight. He's a good time guy. In terms of when things are going right, he's a great player to have on the pitch. When things are going wrong, he'll just turn off, right? So for me, that's where I think I don't see the value in it. But if we put Bajetic, we have Curtis Jones, we have these kids, okay, who can give you the hunger. You talk about legs, not just legs, it's the hunger as well to become part of this next generation, of next evolution of the Liverpool team. And I do agree with changing the formation of it. I think we should. I think we have the right players to do a 4-2-3-1. And I put Salah as the one at the very top. And we've seen him play through the centre before, mm-hmm. right? But it still allows you to have that tactical flexibility of the three mm-hmm. lads behind them being any combination of Gakpo, Elliot, Carvalho, whoever's available, that you don't nail them down to specific positions as such. They can all rotate and Salah can drop out and still have players going. And it just gives you that bit that's going on. And then the two in midfield, you get somebody with the tactical mouse that you need to play with one of the younger fellas. And this is the whole idea, is that this generates the freshness. You don't need to sign someone. You just what you're doing is regenerating that buzz within the squad itself. You're putting your arms around the kids that have been coming on with you and with the League Cup sides and all this type of stuff, and saying, you can do this. This is the opportunity. This is how Trent got into our team. This is how Nat Phillips has managed to stay at the club for the amount of times he is, and keep putting the things there and bring them in and bring them and bring them and bring them and bring them through in terms of what's there. And potentially even start looking at different things. Maybe we go three at the back. If you have Matip and you have Kanate and you have Van Dijk when he comes back, maybe you just switch. Maybe just throw a tactical bomb in there every now and then to just get other teams thinking about how we're setting up. Because everyone thinks there's going to be the forward there and the two fullbacks are going to push and they're going to do this. But maybe you just go differently and you put your two lads that are playing essentially as wing-backs, really as wing-backs, and you just start doing this. Just create questions in the other team's minds. And who does that go back to again at the end of the day? It goes back to the manager to make those decisions, but make them proactively as opposed to make them reactively. We're almost in a reactive period, but...
I couldn't agree with you more about doing something different, because my biggest frustration of this season, it's frustrated me. This transfer window has frustrated me because I feel we need someone. I think we needed one the last transfer window and we didn't do it. Bar Mello, who's played 13 minutes. We should do something in this window. I don't care how we do it. We should do it. But I don't know if we will, right? But my biggest frustration is turning up every week and doing the same thing and expecting different results, mm-hmm. right? And, mm-hmm. If you keep going and doing the same thing, especially when you have an opponent that can see you doing the same thing, they're going to just go, well, he's going to do that, I'm just going to do this, and then I'm going to beat him. You know, the sort of way, in right down to fucking drafts or chess or tiddlywinks. Do you know what I mean? They're all going to do it. In football, they're just going to go, they've nothing in the midfield, we're just going to let them come onto us a slight bit, and we're going to get it into midfield as quick as we can, and then we can cause havoc. That's exactly what Brighton done the other day. I couldn't agree with you more, right? But people think when you want to change things, you want to write off players completely for the rest of the season, i.e. a Keita or a Henderson or a Fabinho. I'm not saying write them off for the season. What I'm saying is that put more trust in other players in a more significant way. And if you said to me, right, they're not going to play 4-2, they're not going to play 4-3-3. They're going to play 4-2-3-1. And what they're going to do is they're going to stick Salah up front, right? And they're going to put Darwin Nunez on the left. And they're going to put Gakpo in the 10. And they're going to put Elliot up, in that tree ahead. And they're going to put Thiago and Fabinho or Thiago and Bacicic or anything like that. But what they're going to basically say is to Fabinho, Henderson, who look like they're out on their feet, right? They're going to say to them, you are not playing three games in a week. You're going to play on Saturday, right? And you're not playing during the week. I don't care who are fucking playing, you are not playing. You might play the following weekend, but if this young fella comes in and does well, he's going to fucking play. And I think an element of it is players are too comfortable, right? And they need that kick somewhere. Now, I think the biggest kick they could get is someone coming in where they go, oh, fucking hold on, this is not only about me being in the team this season. I could be fucking gone at the end of the season if a switch goes at management or board level where we're going. We're root. These are out. This is over. We're going to go and do things that have never been seen in Klopp's tenure. But we need to change what we're doing. You know, if Liverpool turn up against Chelsea on Saturday morning, half 12 Saturday, and the lineup comes out and you go, right, okay, the back four. But Jesus, he's playing. It looks like he's playing Thiago and Bacicic here. And Elliot could be there. I think Salah might be. It's different. Not only is it different for us, like you said, it makes other teams think. But the scope mm-hmm. then to change it around as you play, right? There's no problem with Henderson coming on for a half an hour or Fabinho or Oxlade-Chamberlain. But these players look either out on their feet or disinterested, and you're still playing them in the same system every week, and you're just turning up going, we know what's going to happen here. Like Brighton, you knew what was going to happen. They were going to turn up. They were going to probably try to be a bit more solid, but they couldn't help themselves in going and trying to press in some way Brighton. Then they got eaten alive. And they were eaten alive.
Gav, the other side of this is it also, it just infuses that enthusiasm throughout the fan base. That's something. And I don't even, it shouldn't even be a reaction to the fan base. And you should never make decisions based off a fan base because you won't be in a job for too long. Look at Frank Lampard. But like, in reality though, right, given the guys in the stands something to shout about, something to cheer on, and something to have hope, at this moment in time, the reason why fans are really struggling with this, and it gets me because I've lived through our great periods in the 80s, and then I lived through 1991 to 2016, right? And like, let's be honest about it, the good times are few and far between in that whole period. I mean, proper good times, what we've seen under Klopp. And looking at this now, it's very different because this is the first time we have to question, and it didn't happen in the 80s. We never had the opportunity in the 90s, but this is now the first time where a great manager in the modern era of football, which is 24/7 and non-stop in terms of fans and have never existed before, has to go and rebuild from almost from a base that's similar to what it was. But I think it's an artificial base. And this is where I go back to. I think the fatigue element from last season is so underplayed. It gets mentioned and it gets a passing nod. But I genuinely think that people have underestimated the impact of that fatigue. And I'm not talking about physical tiredness, mental...
But Phil, who underestimated it the most? The people with all the information
this is what I'm saying.
Have underestimated
it
the
most. I'm going back to it again. I keep going back to this again.
Come here.
Every time.
But at the end of last season, Phil, we have two trophies where a kick of a ball either way away from a quadruple, right? Whether you like it or not, that's what we were. It was fucking brilliant, right? And we all lived in the moment. And you were saying, you could see it in March and you could see it in April. And I probably could, but I went, fuck it, who cares? We're having a fucking great time here. Just go with it. You can't do anything about it anyway. You're in the middle of April. You can't sign anyone. You can't do anything. Just go with it, right? But... And when it came, saying all summer on this channel, all summer, you need a midfielder. You definitely need a fucking midfielder. And part of me would say, he's fucking saying he doesn't. You know, and he has it all in front of him. He has all the analytics in front of him. They're in the red zone. The fucking things attached to them all the time. They're sticking things in their fucking ear when they turn up at the access centre straight after pre-season. You know, when they're starting pre-season. They have everything in front of them. All the information. And it still didn't happen. So... do you see this as a massive... Forget the ownership, right? I'm not going into the ownership tonight, right? Because we do it every fucking night of the week, right? But do you see this low point as a massive watershed? Because, and the reason I'm going to ask you is because if we continue on the way we're going, Liverpool will finish between 7th and 10th in the league this season. That's my opinion, right? If we change it, bring Jumpers in, Ben Doak might get a load of games, and all right, he's only a fucking kid. But if we change it, we add more energy to it and maybe change his system and try to get Salah in front of goal more. Nunes is a huge player for us. He's missed chances, but I think he's a huge player. The threat he has alone, I think, affects other teams, right? But you never know where we'll end up. We could try and end up 7th. We could try and end up 10th. We could try and end up 3rd. We don't know. But is this a massive time now? Because, Phil, as we sit here, right, we have the ownership thing. We have Klopp, who only has 3 seasons after this one, right? You have the recruitment. You have the Edwards/Julian Ward role. There's so much in the air at the moment. Is it going to take where they turn around? They come together. And I said the players and managers have to come together last night. But where the people that are still there or will be still there following the end of the season have to get together and go, listen, this is what we have to do. This is how it has to be done. And so be it. Because there's no point in just trudging along here. Let's just make it a fucking big decision and a big change, and whether that includes a sale of the club, this is what we're going to have to go for.
Look, every moment in micro sense looks like a watershed moment. Every defeat feels like the world is collapsing on top of you, right? Every time that the team doesn't achieve what we expected to achieve. And by the way, top four for me is always the baseline for when Klopp was there. So if we don't achieve it, whether it's once it's a failure, it's an absolute abject failure of a season, no matter what happens, right? But in terms of what they gave us last season, if I'd said to you last season, I think I might have said it on the podcast at one stage last season, if we go all the way and do everything, but we don't win the league, but we end up finishing seventh or eighth next season, would you still do it? And everyone, to a man, to an absolute person, bar some lunatics that don't deserve any air, but would say yes.
What was the ultimatum? What was the?
So we do what we did last season, right? But you finish 10th this season. There isn't a single person who's a Liverpool fan.
Oh, so you're saying like if you go out of last season, you don't know what the results are of the league and the European Cup, but we finished 10th. Yeah, of course you do.
Yeah, because look, at the end of the day, if teams exist...
But we all live in the moment, Phil. We all live in the moment. So last year, you know, last season, I'm like that. You're on a roll and you're like, who fucking cares? Just keep playing football and we see where we end up. Disappointed, yeah. And this season, there's disappointment, there's frustration. There's frustration at loads of different things. But at the end of it, I do kind of look and go, like, I see Arsenal fans now declaring that the Liverpool-Man City rivalry era is over, you know, because of 15 or 16 league games. I'm kind of going, we'll see about that. But I do have this outlook where I know in my head what I'd like to see happen. I'm not sure it will all happen, but I know come the start of next season, I'll be back on it going, yeah, come on. You know, okay. Sort of way.
Let me put it like this, right? We are closer to a cataclysmic, disastrous summer than we are to the dawning of a new age, right? And whether people like this or not, they can accept, not accept, they can live with the hope that's there, and I hope they do, because that's what fans are meant to do. But the reality is, even if Jesus took over the club tomorrow, right, and uses God's infinite powers of wealth, right, because he can just invent whatever money he needs, and he's God, right? Without having the right people in the right places in the recruitment side will mean you will still have significant gaps when it comes to the recruitments that you need to make over the course of the summer. And if our manager is so determined to only bring in exact players as opposed to players, right, then nothing gets resolved. You might get one or two players or three players in the summertime, but does that give us the fundamental change that we need to get back to challenge the league? No, because again, by the time we get out at the end of next season, I think next season, regardless, they didn't buy a single player, I think next season will be a significantly better season than this season will be. But by the time they get out, those players that will come back from the fatigue, come back from the tiredness, come back from everything that goes on, right, will be another year older. Henderson will be 24, Fabinho will be 31, Thiago will be 47, Milner will be 53, right? You get to that point where age does impact these performances, and age is impacting the people that are there at this moment in time. But the changes that are needed are so big at this point, right? And it's not just players, it's the whole structure within the club. It sort of says to me that it's more likely that a full sale will happen. And then what happens after that full sale is actually more important than any single player that we buy in the summer window, if that makes sense, right? Because if the sale doesn't happen before April or May, and we have these recruitment
you're
gaps...
I think you're definitely going to hear something on this, I would say, within the next month. That's what I feel on it. I feel that you're going to hear something, because as soon as this January transfer window ends, it's going to be what is going on in the summer. And more people are going to ask that question. So I think you're going to see something. Whether it's FSG tell you, no, we're selling 35% of the club, or whether we're selling 40 or 60 or the whole lot or none at all, or whatever it might be, or our finance. You don't know what it's going to be, but I think you might hear something the next month or 6 weeks. That's just my opinion on it, and I think it'll all be timed around the end of that transfer window.
So, and I come back to, unless whoever's coming in has a plug and play in terms of whoever's guiding them or guiding the people or encouraging the people to take over and knows, and I've already set it up. So if you look at what Manchester City did when the lads went in there from Etihad or whatever, I can't remember what that place is, Abu Dhabi, went in, they literally said, right, we're taking all the Barcelona people and we're putting them straight into Manchester City. That's essentially what they did, right? Mm-hmm. They brought Tiki Begirstein, all the lads they could get, robbed the fella out of our academy, put them in and said, right, there you go, plug and play, right? So to me, that's the only logic, that when I'm looking at this, and saying to myself, okay, the only way this works and resolves itself is if you get plug and play. Otherwise, my worry is the vacuum that we start to experience now becomes entrenched and doesn't help Klopp, and we go down a significantly more difficult route to get back to the top, right? And I'll just put it there. I've said along this, and I've put a large proportion of the blame here on Jurgen Klopp tonight, right? And I am arguably one of the biggest Klopp fans, and I'm saying here now, I do not want any other manager or anybody else to be given the opportunity to right this ship. But every single person here tonight, if this continues on for another two or three seasons, everyone will be saying the Klopp era was fantastic, but it's time that we changed, right? And that's just football. It's cyclical. And you know, when I look at Jurgen Klopp, the season he took out, or the time he took out from the time he was at Dortmund to when he came, he even changed his own philosophies and came with a fresher idea of how he wanted to play his style of football at Liverpool when he got here. It wasn't the same as what he had at Dortmund. It was a different version of what he had there. And sometimes, go back, rest is as good as whatever the saying is, right? But I just hope that he is given the opportunity to do this and that he has the right counterbalances in place to enable him to do it so that he can realise the continued success he's had for the last 7 to 8 years at the club and get us back there. It's such a big task.
The counterbalance remains to be seen what it is, whether that's people that are brought in to replace the likes of Julian Ward and Ian Graham and whoever, or new owners that come in and go, listen, what you say goes. Because whoever comes in is going to have a colossal amount of money. We know this, you know what I mean? Because you're just not making money out of Liverpool Football Club in this stage on. You're not buying a club for £4 billion and making money on it, unless there's a Super League down the road where you're getting £300 million a year to play in it, and then your asset really goes up. But as things stand, you're not making money on Liverpool, because you would have to take in what you take in, you'd have to put more money on top, and in order to do that, you would be spending your own money every year to fund Liverpool. So I suppose the balancing act, or the yin and yang, as you touched on earlier, is either going to be them all getting together, and they probably have, we don't know, and said, right, we're going to have to bring in this person, in these three positions, okay? These three positions, we're going to have to bring these people in to work alongside Jurgen Klopp, who's absolutely behind it, and we're going to do that by the end of this season. We're going to start fresh. Or somebody comes in and says, don't worry about all that. Money's not an object. What you say goes, and you go ahead and you make the decisions on it. Couple of things coming out. Antico says Paul Joyce's report to Liverpool do want Jude Bellingham and Tyus Nunes off Wolves. Eunice is very.
Did he make
excited.
Wine?
Who?
Matthews Rose.
Who?
Your man off Wolves, Matthews Rose.
No, Matthias Nunes. Eunice is really excited. But look, I think it's been really interesting, because we do look on the pitch an awful lot. We do look at just Klopp, and we look at FSG. And in fairness, we've covered what you've spoken about a little bit over the last while with people leaving and what does it mean and stuff like that. But to sit down tonight and talk about it, I think it's been really, really good. Is there anything else before we go, Phil? Anything you'd like to speak about? Because anything you'd like to talk about? Any sport you've noticed?
No, I'm firmly entrenched at the moment in the American throwball, so it's
go Giants
season. Go Giants! You're having a great year. This is like, well, you're having the Arsenal year.
I deserve it, because 3 years ago you and Dicko told me to pick the New York Giants because they'll become good, they'll be great, and they were fucking putrid for two seasons. And now they just turned up and they're having a great year. But Shawnee tells me they won't go any further than the divisional game that they've made their way into last night.
Listen, all I'm saying is that they've surprised people so far, and fair play to them. And it's been great to watch. The reason why I love it is because I sat down on Saturday night and Sunday night. I had a phenomenal night's view in terms of what was going on. It's just crazy excitement, and it was fantastic. It was just fantastic. And Ray was up this morning at 4 o'clock in the morning texting me, getting really excited. I could hear him scream from his house at the excitement when the Bengals won.
Yeah.
And I was like, they're going, that's great. So it was just, it's just phenomenal. Phenomenal stuff. Any other sports, I've been mainly watching an awful lot of cyclocross and running around mountains an awful lot. Like, I've been running around mountains an awful lot because I have a race in 11 weeks' time. Yeah. So it's back to the drawing board again.
I've been trying to get out and play golf, but the weather's just, it's either wet or fucking frozen. So hopefully at some stage the golf will be back.
I have an interest with me and Steve O'Daly are out training together. So
for what?
Yeah. Well, Steve was coming to do one of these races with me in the back end of the year. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Can we go and watch?
Well, yes, can, but it's far away.
But what's far away?
It's in Kerry.
Oh, that'd be a great out trip. We got an old van, you know, like a minivan. We go down, no seats in the back. We all just go in the back of it. We have an
ice. Now I have to get a light ice, a proper light ice. Go back to
mid-90s high ice. Maybe perfect. A van with his Isuzu written down the side of it. Do you remember the Isuzu vans?
Mm.
One of them would be cool. Like a maroon coloured one, I think it'd be great.
I had letters and numbers on it.
Gomby and Hunter says you're Irish, a bit of cold should do nothing. No, it's nothing to do with that. I go out and play in anything. It's that the courses are closed. Because of the excessive rain, and then once it's frosty, you don't open golf courses because it ruins them. There you go. Well done for you and Steve doing that. I might round up the lads and have a day out and watch that. I'm trying to go playing golf, and rest of the week. Tomorrow the lads will be on full time Reds after Liverpool away to Wolves in the cup replay. Thursday should be.
I just want to say well done to Kev and Chris for doing that throughout the course of the season, because I know how difficult that type of stuff is. That's horrible.
Well, it was horrible on Saturday, but they got through it. They done really well. I was actually Chris and Matt, I think it was, at the weekend. But
it's like doing a circumcision, but only one bit a week. Taking a peeler blade to yourself just to see what can happen.
Yeah, we're a rusty blade in a bottle of vinegar. Thursday should be the viewer's voice. Friday, the Premier League forecast. Saturday will be full-time Reds early enough because we play Chelsea at 12:30. Sunday will be the fatback four. Loads of people really liking the show tonight. Jono says, top show. A good few people have just gone on my screen and says, thanks for a great show. You're more than welcome. Hit the like button on your way out. Subscribe if you haven't already. And I'll say it again. Bookmakers.com, check out their website, check out the YouTube channel, they're both in the show description. But as well as that, our charity push for cancer, breast cancer research, the GoFundMe is out there. Check out the link in the description. If you can donate, brilliant. If you can't, take the link, send it around your friends, your family, your colleagues. If you need, we have a poster there, an A4 poster if you want it. We can send it to you, you print it off, and there's a little QR code in it. So if it's in the canteen and work or on desks or wherever it might be, people just walk up, scan it with their phone, straight in, and they can donate. So we want to get to 20,000 for 12 women that are running the Dublin Marathon together. They're training right now. They've literally been out tonight because my wife goes with them, and it's fucking freezing out tonight. It was lashing. So if you can support them, absolutely go and support them. It's a brilliant, it's a ridiculous attempt. 12 people to run. One person running a marathon, fuck me, but 12 pushing each other. I said 12 because it was 11. There's actually 12 now.
Yeah.
There's actually 12. And for all of them to push each other, not many of them have ran marathons, by the way. One of them I know has never ran one. One of them finished their first ever half marathon about 6 months ago. So just if you can donate, please do. Please share it. It's a brilliant cause that this sort of cancer touches so many people.
My missus ran the Dublin City Marathon last year. It was the second time she ran it. And I know how much dedication and effort goes into it. So for all women that are doing it, it's so worth supporting, because like you give up massive amount of time, particularly as you get closer to it at that stage. And I know how much that level of training, especially for people who aren't used to it, the impact it has on their body and stuff like that. But from a mental side, it's a phenomenal thing. And it's a phenomenal achievement to do when they cross the line at the end. It doesn't matter how long it takes them to get there.
And the fact that there's 12 of them.
Phenomenal achievement.
The fact that 12 of them, and they're all making sure they're all going to finish it. They're all making sure they're out training. They all, like, there's definitely nights where, you know, one girl might want to go, or I'm fucking tired, I was walking. So to get them all, and they're making sure, like, every night they've training, they're all out doing it, no matter how tired they are, whatever, or what the weather's like, they're all going and doing it. So I think it's a very, very worthy cause, not only for them, to show them you're supporting them by donating, but the money that'll go towards breast cancer research is huge. That has been the midweek fix of a Monday. As I said, there's loads of content coming throughout the week. We're trying our best to clip up these shows a little bit and throw them out on social media for people to get an idea of the show. So if you see them, share them around as well. And maybe if you're watching this show and you're listening and you come across the clip, you might go, oh yeah, I forgot he said that. Because that happens all the time. I forget that the lad said it and I'm fucking doing the clips about a half an hour later. So go and check them out as well. That's it. Talk to you in a bit. Over and out.
Podcast Network.